and welcome to another Premier League preview podcast exclusively for you guys here on Patreon. Thank you as ever for being here. Hope you're well. Hope everything is okay where you are, wherever you are in the world. Hope everyone is safe, happy, healthy, and everything else as much as we can be at this moment in time. Let's leave all that to one side, though, as a distraction. Let's talk about football. Let's talk about our game against Crystal Palace on Thursday evening. It's a little bit different this time because we're going to get some Palace perspective first before we talk to Lewis, as usual. And with me to discuss it is Dan from Hopkin Looking to Curl One. That's at patreon.com/HLTCO. Dan, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Andrew. Yourself?
Not too bad at all. Thank you very much. We're gone beyond the point where I can wish you Happy New Year, so I won't do that. But tell me a little bit about your season so far. Just looking at it from a Premier League point of view, like, you're in mid-table, you're just a point behind Arsenal. Whether that's because we've set the bar quite low from our standards, I'm not quite sure. But, like, you're there, thereabouts. But looking at the results and looking at some of the performances, wins are kind of sporadic. Would that be a good way of putting it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we are in a bit of a strange period of time for Crystal Palace at the moment because Roy Hodgson has been at the club now 3.5 years, I think, which is a very long time for any Palace manager to be in post. And in many ways, if you look at it in the overall picture, he's definitely stabilised us. Obviously, he took over following Frank de Boer's 5-game tenure. And we were looking dead and buried then, and he managed to steady the ship. And obviously, we've been consistently out of relegation trouble ever since. But in many ways, the sort of negative football that he plays from week to week and the lack of goals, obviously the cup competitions as well. I think it's 2 years now and 4 games in which we've gone out at the first possible opportunity in both cups and not scored. So there is definitely a sense of sort of frustration and apathy creeping into our fan base. And that in itself is obviously, when you look at it from the outside point of view, we're 11 points clear from the drop zone and everything else. But there's definitely people hoping that we can kick on, and we've got a big summer coming up in terms of the amount of players out of contract as well. So there's a fair bit of worry going around our fan base at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a weird time as well, though, isn't it? Because if this were normal circumstances, if there was no COVID, if stadiums were full, if, you know, the income was steady, if you like, or at least projectable. I mean, I think that's one of the issues that clubs are having, isn't it? That they can't really project where their income is going to be. And it's so unstable in general. It feels very precarious at the moment. You know, football, I know, has carried on, but it just feels a little bit like the COVID thing has pricked the bubble in a big way. And I do wonder if we're going to see some issues down the line. But, you know, under normal circumstances, it might be easier to sort of make a case for a new manager or whatever it might be. But because of the way things are, it does complicate it.
Without a doubt. The problem really in terms of the managerial situation from Palace's point of view is that Roy Hodgson is not getting any younger. And whilst you don't want to be ageist and sort of make a case for him to move on based on his age alone, when it's coupled with the relatively negative football that we're seeing, there's obviously concerns in terms of our long-term place in the league. Because if you look at Palace as an overall prospect, we've got, as I say, a lot of players out of contract this summer.
How many?
There's a regular conversation. It's 14, I think, in total.
Wow.
Which is a quite ridiculous number. And then you've obviously got the Wilfried Zaha element as well, because without him, we are a completely different prospect. And he, for his own sort of career, wants to try and secure a move away. So when you've got that number of players that are coming towards the end of their time, a star player that doesn't necessarily want to be there for the long term, and a manager that's potentially coming towards the end of his time as boss, it is definitely, there's many, many plates spinning for Steve Parish and the rest of the board, put it that way.
Yeah, that's 14 players is huge, isn't it? And you can, yeah. I know Palace have got a great track record of bringing through young players, but that's way too much for any academy to try and make up the gap.
Without a doubt. And the thing is, I mean, players like Mamadou Sakho, Max Meyer, Christian Benteke, they're not on small amounts of money every week. So in terms of the wage budget and what we'd have to play with in terms of bringing players in on free transfers, it's not like we wouldn't have the availability of money for wages, but you've got to potentially bring players in for transfer fees, because it's not just going to be a case of filling up all 14 squad places with free transfers. So it's definitely a worrying time for us when we look at the next sort of 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, we've got a few players out of contract. You can have a couple if you like. It's no problem. tell me about Zaha then. I mean, obviously he's been the standout player for you so far this season. I think he's 8 goals in all competitions, a couple of assists to his name. Like you say, you'd be a different prospect without him. What's the feeling within the Palace fan base about what he might want for his career? You know, the links to Arsenal obviously go back, a little while, because Unai Emery wanted to bring him in and Arsenal went in a different direction and brought in Nicolas Pepe. You know, would the Palace fans begrudge him a move at this point? Or is there a sense that, look, you've got a lot of good years out of him, good seasons, he's done his best for the club, and at 28, you know, this is his last chance for perhaps a move to a club which he might consider, I don't want to say more important because that sounds terrible, but you know what I mean? That might sort of fulfill the ambitions he has as a player.
Yeah, the thing with Wilf is that it's not necessarily that we would begrudge him the move, but in many ways, he sort of backed himself into a corner because he signed his 5-year contract 2.5 years ago, maybe 2 years ago now, and that didn't have a release clause in it. And when you look at Crystal Palace's prospects of staying in the league from year to year, it isn't a huge leap to suggest that he is the key factor in us maintaining our Premier League status. So in many ways, it's not that we would begrudge him a move either at board level or the supporters, because we know what he's offered the football club for a decade or more, and he wants to be able to win trophies. He's been publicly saying that in terms of an interview that he did with Jamie Carragher a little while ago and different things in the press. But it's got to be a situation where we get value for money. And to be quite honest with you, when you consider the precarious financial nature of the Premier League at the moment, as you've already alluded to, and how much Premier League football is worth in terms of TV revenue year on year, I would argue that he's almost priceless to us, because without him, you'd argue that we would pretty much be on a hide into nothing in terms of our ability to stay in the division. So unless a PSG or a Borussia Dortmund or an Arsenal come in with, say, 70, 80 million, I don't think Steve Parish is going to pull the trigger, because getting a player or players that can have the same impact on our first team as Zaha does from week to week is going to be almost impossible.
Yeah, I mean, that is a complicated one, isn't it? Because as much as there might be goodwill towards the player, and like, again, in normal circumstances, we would be willing to let you go to, you know, not thank you for your service, because you want to extract value from a player who's performed for you on a very consistent level. But the impact it would have on the side in terms of its attacking prowess is huge.
I mean, and the thing is as well, it's not, I mean, obviously you've had your own high profile players, Robin Van Persie, etc., over the years, but when you consider the jeopardy of dropping out of the Premier League altogether, I think that's the key factor in this, because from your point of view, it means, you know, you let him go, you might not be in a title race for a year or two, but you can rebuild. Whereas if we lose our Premier League status, there are so many clubs that have dropped out of the Premier League and never returned that you sort of think to yourself, we need to hang on to this for all we can. And that's the dilemma that Steve Parish finds himself in relation to Zaha's future, really.
Yeah. What else have been the positives for you this season in terms of individuals or collective issues? Are there other things that stand out that you've been pleased with and you can see perhaps progress and potential in?
Not as an overall team unit, because I feel as though, you know, you look at the age of the squad and the nature of our football from week to week, it hasn't really changed in the time that Roy Hodgson's been in charge. But the signing of Vibir Ayeze from QPR has definitely got pulses racing a little bit, because he's something so different to anything else we've got in the side outside of Zaha. You know, someone who's young, someone who's got potential to become even better, and he's already scored a fantastic free kick against Leeds, and he ran from inside his own half against Sheffield United, beat 3 or 4 men and slotted it in the bottom corner. So as an individual, he's definitely made an impact on the first team and got fans excited about something outside of Zaha again.
The age profile, you just mentioned it there, and I have the squad list up on Transfermarkt here. It is striking how many players that you've got who are above 30 or above, and then there's a whole clutch of players sort of around 29, 28, 29 as well. That is a really difficult situation to manage, isn't it?
Without a doubt. And the problem is, and it's not necessarily Roy Hodgson's fault, because, you know, he's got a job description to keep us in the league, and he does technically prefer the more experienced players because they can execute his tactical plans from week to week and be trusted to sort of carry it out. But there's a bit of a, in my opinion at least, a bit of a disconnect between how people view Roy Hodgson and how Palace fans view him. Because if you look at Aaron Wan-Bissaka's progress into our first team, it was forced upon him in terms of the injury crisis we had at right back that gave him the opportunity to play. And similarly, Tyreek Mitchell, who's come through at left back and has been playing really well for us in the last few months, once again, that was only forced upon him via an injury to Patrick Van Aanholt. So it's not as if he's trying to actively cultivate this youth culture within the team. It's more, it's come about because of him being forced to do it, and they've almost proved to him against all odds that they do actually deserve a place in the first team.
That, I mean, that's going to be the job or job for the next guy, whether it's Hodgson or the next guy, to try and address that age imbalance that you have. I suppose the only thing is that there are going to be, because of the COVID thing, a lot of players out of contract and available on so-called free transfers in the summer. So yeah, well, look, get to the end of the season and try and work that one out. We'll see what happens there. How have you from a distance viewed what's happened at Arsenal this season? I suppose you would probably prefer to be facing the Arsenal from a couple of weeks ago than the Arsenal of the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I actually said that on my own podcast this morning, to be honest. The Arsenal of a month ago, I'd have fancied Palace to get a point or maybe even three. But you look at the change in form, I think you've won four in a spin now, haven't you? Only conceded one goal in that time. So you're definitely looking to be a different prospect. And we've got Manchester City coming up straight after that as well. So it's not a particularly pleasant couple of games for us. But the thing with Roy Hodgson is that every time you assume that we're sort of on this downward trend and we're going to be getting negative results, he tends to pull wins out of nowhere and we're never really sure when they're coming or why they appear. So, I don't know, I'm sort of going into it and everything that's logical about the game tells me we're going to lose, but there's still a part of me that thinks we might pull something out of the bag out of nowhere.
I mean, that is the beauty of football, though, isn't it? You know, it is to have this hope, whether it's ridiculous or you feel it's ridiculous to have it or not, it is part of what keeps us going as football fans. You know, because I can, you know, when we were about to play Chelsea just before Christmas, it was like, well, logically, given everything that's gone on and given the run that we've been on and the form that we're in and the fact we're not creating any chances, we're going to lose this game. But there's part of your brain that goes into it going, well, just, you never know. Just maybe. We might just, you know. And that's what happened. And it sort of sparked our revival, if you like. But it is, of course, important for us to keep it going. So, yeah. Well, look, we'll see what happens. Just to give people an idea of what you're doing over on your Patreon, I know you're doing, obviously, Crystal Palace-focused stuff, but you do general football stuff as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, your listeners probably aren't aware of it in their mass numbers, but about 5 months ago now, I had 700 odd patrons to just listen to a Palace podcast every day. And then I mentioned it on social media that I was 300 away from being able to quit my job, and it exploded in the space of 24 hours and went over 1,000. And as a consequence of that and the goodwill that so many neutral football fans showed towards me for it, I decided to record a general football podcast daily alongside the Palace one. So now I record two every morning, Monday to Friday, that are up by sort of 9:30 in the morning and go through everything in football alongside a standalone Palace one. So it's going well, and as I say, I've been able to quit my job and do it full time, which has always been a dream. So yeah, it's a strange sort of work to be doing, but it's definitely pleasant compared to what I was doing beforehand.
Sure, look, I know how it is, and congratulations on that. It's a testament to your hard work and dedication to do that every morning. You know, I've been doing podcasts for a long time. To have two up by 9:30 every morning, I can tell you, is quite an achievement. Look, we'll leave it there, Dan. Obviously, I can't wish you luck for tomorrow, but for the rest of the season, absolutely. And in the summer, when you're doing your squad rebuild, we'll catch up with you hopefully at some point later in the season.
Without a doubt. Thank you very much for having me on.
Right, now for the Arsenal perspective. As ever, I'm joined on the Preview Podcast by Lewis Ambrose. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Andrew.
Let's just, before we jump into the game and the preview of it, let's talk a little bit about Rob Holding. Your thoughts on the contract extension that we handed out to him? You know, I wrote about it in the blog today, Wednesday. It is Wednesday, yes. I'm on top of what day it is. It's not still Christmas, so I know. So Wednesday, yeah, I wrote about it. I think it's a sensible deal for Arsenal. I think it's a good deal for the club to do. I think the player has merited a new deal. You know, he's 2 years out, more or less. We have to make a decision. We've made the decision, so we're not heading into these kind of limbo periods we end up with so many players. So I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are about Rob Holding and the future he might have.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal. I think it makes a lot of sense. If you look at the defenders at the club and people talk about how many there are at the club, but the centre-backs that we've got, you've got Socrates, you've got Mustafi, you've got David Luiz. I think none of those will be at Arsenal next season. William Saliba, obviously, it's a little bit up in the air what his standing is with Mikel Arteta and with Edu as well, I guess. So Callum Chambers hasn't played now for over a year in the Premier League. It would be kind of madness considering how much we have to do in the summer already. We talked about midfield last week and they're being linked with another right-sided centre-back. It would be kind of crazy to leave themselves in a position where they need to sign two extra centre-backs.
Yeah.
And it's also he's also another homegrown player. I think our situation is not particularly strong when it comes to the homegrown players we have, and we need as many as possible to stay so that the squad can remain as big and as competitive as possible, especially if we're going to be in Europe season after season. So I think it's important to keep those players at the moment, even if people maybe can question possibly the quality of Rob Holding. I think he's played a lot better recently than he did, say, the first 7 or 8 games of the season, where I thought he was a bit shaky. And he definitely seems to have come into a bit better form now. And look, I know people maybe think, oh, well, we need to be kind of moving on from players that aren't going to win us the league and aren't going to be Champions League caliber. But they want to sign a right-sided centre-back. That's been well reported. There's no reason that Rob Holding can't be the sort of the Pablo Mari to that guy's Gabriel.
Yeah.
In terms of squad building going forward, if you're looking 1 or 2 years down the line.
Yeah, look, I think the other part of it, as I said in the blog, is look at the resources that we have. Look at what we need to do in the summer. And, you know, trimming the centre half fat was really important. You know, we've too many of those. But we also have big issues in midfield. You know, Elneny, whether he stays or goes, I suspect he'll go. You know, his stock will have, I think, improved a little bit this season based on how much he's played. And people maybe didn't expect him to play that much. The perfect time to cash in on a guy who we need to upgrade on, there's no question. Ceballos is going. Joe Willock, who knows, he could be gone, whether it's on loan or permanently, depending on what happens with him. So I think the resources that we have available to us have to be ploughed into rebuilding our midfield. I think in the front three, we're probably pretty well covered, all things considered. It's not to say we can't do a couple of things there if we want, but in terms of the personnel we have right now, you know, there's a lot there, but midfield is where we're going to need to make the investment. And if you can save yourself, you know, 20 million, 25 million on a mid-range centre half, which is what we would be able to attract, you know, in terms of our stature. You know, I like your optimistic note about European football next season. You know, we have to be realistic about where we are and the kind of player we can attract. So if we go out in the market, are we going to be able to get anyone significantly better than Rob Holding, who I think, you know, is a player whose career has been quite impacted by injuries. He's never had that consistent run in the side. So if he can manage that and develop at 25 is a good age for a centre half, 25, 28 to 30, you know, it's a good age for them. And it leaves money free for us to do things that we need to do in midfield. It ticks all the boxes for me.
Yeah, and I like what the club announced yesterday with the extra optional year and the deal. I think that's smart. I think that's something that you'd like to see probably more from Arsenal, little things like that. Maybe we have seen it and we haven't seen it because it's been sort of hidden. But
no, they've never told about it. They've never done that in the sense that they've never told us exactly when the deal
is
announced to. Yeah, I mean, it's not top secret information because you can ask the press office and they will tell you. So it's not like it's, you know, we're not releasing this information. It's not like confidential stuff like wages or contracts, you know, how much somebody's on or anything like that. But to make it so public, I wonder, is that a different thing that we're going to see from now on?
Possibly. And I think the club probably, I think there's probably an acceptance that people aren't happy and that people maybe, there is a lot of talk nowadays. I mean, Askcast, Arsenal Vision podcast, and everybody on Twitter, there's so much talk about squad building and who could we sign and who should we sell. Mm. And it's not just chitter-chatter in the pub, which it might have been 20 years ago or 30 years ago. It's actually really informed conversation, a lot of it now. I think in terms of Rob Holding, there's some doubt about whether or not he's the caliber of player that Arsenal should be signing to a new long-term deal. And I think it makes a lot of sense that it just sort of, it protects you for that extra year to make it an option and not just an automatic contract to, was it 2025 it would have been. It protects you. If Rob Holding is bad for the next 18 months, they can sell him and they're not stuck like we've been stuck with Mustafi, for example, just to pick one of a number of players we could have picked. I mean, there's a litany of defenders there, aren't there? We'd be stuck with them. I thought, for another example, I thought Serge Kolasinac was out of contract at the end of this season. I didn't realise he was going on loan to Schalke with one more year still to go on his Arsenal deal. I think 4 years plus an optional year on the club side makes complete sense, all these deals, because in 2 or 3 years you have no idea where a player will stand in your squad and if he's been through injury problems and things like that. If you want to sell him a year earlier, it makes it so much easier.
Well, for sure, for sure. And look, I fully accept that there are, you know, questions about the quality or the ceiling that Rob Holding might have are perfectly legitimate. I think that's reasonable conversation to have. But I also think that, you know, if you're talking about having world-class center halves who could help us win a title, that's a conversation for a little bit down the road, because we are some way away from being a team that can compete for a title or you know, even look realistic contenders for a top four spot at this moment in time. So you need players who can help you get there, and then you think about upgrading, and I think Rob Holding might well be one of those. But look, I think it's a solid decision. So let's turn our attention to Crystal Palace, and it's a home game against a team who have been, you know, they found wins difficult enough to come by, even though they are only, I think, a point behind us in the table as it stands. We beat Newcastle 2-0 after extra time the other night. There were some positives, obviously, from that, in the sense that Aubameyang scored a goal, Kieran Tierney was great again, Saka came on, Smith Rowe came on and made the difference. Is there anybody who started that game who was perhaps handed an opportunity by Mikel Arteta to sort of knock on his door or change his thinking about what kind of team he selects for this game? Is there anybody who stepped up, or do you think he's going to look at what we did against West Brom and those guys are the guys who are going to get the shout against Palace tomorrow night? Bearing in mind, of course, that we do have another game on Monday night, so 3 days away. You know, we do have some things to think about in terms of how we rotate the squad.
Yeah, I think even if the win against Newcastle had been within 90 minutes and more convincing, we wouldn't have seen the vast majority of the players that came into the side, possibly all of the players who came into the side, still starting that game. I think we'll basically see the exact same 11 as we did at West Brom. Aubameyang's got his goal now and isn't under threat from Martinelli, if you like, because he'll be out injured. I think in midfield,
well, he's in training today. Pictures show Martinelli in training today, so who knows?
He's mentally something else, isn't he? I think just the way he carried on, or tried to carry on, against Manchester City as well, and I was just like, no, please just protect yourself. Maybe he will be in the squad against Crystal Palace.
It's strange. I mean, maybe he can't gauge how serious an injury is. Because, you know, like you say, he tried to carry on against Man City, and within 2 minutes of the second half, he had to come off. And he did turn his ankle quite quite badly in the warm-up. It reminded me of a time I went to play five-a-side after drinking a bottle of white wine on a Sunday afternoon, and the first thing I did when I stepped on the pitch was literally do exactly what he did. I played the full game, though, because I'm a hero and a soldier. But, you know, he was in tears, and Mikel Arteta said he was gutted, and we're all sitting here thinking, fuck, he's really done something terrible to his ankle ligaments or whatever, and now he's back in full training. So maybe he's just not conscious of how bad things are or aren't.
Yeah, I think the one the other day, before the Newcastle game, being a non-contact injury as well, you can imagine everything sort of flooding back to him and just being completely paralysed by fear that means another year out. Obviously, touch wood, we've kind of got away with that for now. I'm pretty sure that they'll sort of protect him and they'll maybe hold him back with Newcastle in mind. Like you say, it's just a 3-day gap into that next game. I think it will be with him still sort of not fully fit and convincing, I think it might be the exact same 11 that we saw against West Brom in that win there. Elneny was maybe the only one who came into the team at the weekend who could have fought for a place, if you like. But there wasn't anything to suggest he should start instead of Xhaka or Dani Ceballos. It depends, really, I guess, if they think Thomas Partey is ready to start a game or not.
Yeah.
Maybe.
This is the interesting one, isn't it?
Maybe he'll play. You do wonder with that Newcastle game so close, how do you manage that?
Do you start him in this one, and then take him off, or do you like bring him on with half an hour to go and give him those minutes get him ready to start against Newcastle?
That's the big question. Either you think you sort of pencil him in for 30 minutes against Palace and a start against Newcastle, or you pencil him in for an hour against Palace and then a start again against Newcastle. I think it's really hard to tell. Obviously, we have no idea how ready he is, how far along he is. And you can imagine after already losing him for so long because they rushed him back once, they'll be a sort of err on the side of caution, which is why I think we didn't see him at the weekend in the FA Cup. But I think, yeah, like you say, from that West Brom side, he's the only player who could come in. And the players who were dropped or rested, I suppose, that played at West Brom and then didn't play against Newcastle, absolutely proved why they should be the starting 11 when they came on, and not just Smith Rowe with his goal, and not just Saka, who is so exciting, and Lacazette with his assist. But I can't remember the last time I heard and saw and read such unanimous praise for Granit Xhaka as well.
After
the way that he played when he came on. So
yeah,
I'm pretty sure that we'll pretty much just see the team that played against West Brom.
Partey.
Yeah. And Gabriel is the other one. I guess he's in a similar situation with Partey. You're not really sure how far he is, how ready he is. But at the same time, Pablo Marie's done nothing that suggests he doesn't deserve to start again.
Yeah, I mean, there are some quotes from Mikel Arteta ahead of this game, which will emerge tonight. So I can't really talk about them in any serious way because there's an embargo. But, you know, the implication is that there's a nice partnership there between Pablo Marie and Rob Holding, and it has served us pretty well in the last number of games. So is he going to change it? And that is perfectly understandable when you've been a team that's conceded quite a few goals and you keep a number of clean sheets. You can understand why he might do that. But look, those are options, and it's sort of nice to think that even if they don't play against Palace or they don't start against Palace, when you're thinking about Newcastle, you've got someone of the quality of Thomas Partey and you've got Gabriel to come in if you want, you know, to try and make up, you know, add a bit of freshness to the team. In terms of Palace, they are going to sit off and they're going to counterattack, which is pretty much what we expected and saw from West Brom. And that was a little bit of a concern, wasn't it? Because one of the things that we have struggled to do as a team this season is break down the so-called low block, a team that parks the bus, if you like, whatever way you want to phrase it. And, you know, Sam Allardyce, interesting afterwards, talking about how his team opened up and Arsenal exploited that. You know, it wasn't the case. I think Arsenal opened them up rather than West Brom playing expansive football and leaving a lot of space. We worked the spaces and made them look defensively weak. So it is going to be a very similar kind of game, In terms of the way the opposition are going to set up and what kind of a threat they have, I think is probably a little more substantial from the Palace point of view, because they've got Wilfried Zaha, who, as we know and we've seen many times, is a real threat. He likes playing at the Emirates. He's had some good games there. And they do have some other attacking, wingers and what have you, who could catch us on the break if we leave too much space.
Yeah, they've beaten Man United early on this season. Mm. They drew with Spurs. I think that game was a really good example of what not to do. Where Spurs did this Mourinho thing of taking the lead and then just sitting back and invited pressure from a team that naturally doesn't sort of exert much of it. So I think this has got to be another game like West Brom, like Newcastle, where not only do we expect to dominate the ball, but we welcome that and we take on that challenge and don't think, if we do take the lead, don't settle with that. Definitely don't let Palace get ahead, because then these games become much tougher to break those teams down. Obviously, it's not always your choice if you'd let somebody ahead or not, but ideally, you kind of avoid that situation. I think it's quite useful for Mikel Arteta. We've talked a bit about the fact that there's been so few weeks without games this season that there's been no time to work on anything. And I think it'll be quite useful to him that now he's had a run of games where we've played West Brom, we've played Newcastle, we're playing Palace and then Newcastle again. It's not a situation where he's going to have to chop and change his approach, his tactics. He's not going to have to... Not that he's not going to have to cater for the opposition.
Yeah, yeah.
But the opposition play the same way, more or less, to each other. The big difference, I think, between what we saw with West Brom and Newcastle is that they played in a back five and Palace don't play in a back five. It's all very 4-4-2-y and two guys will just work and hunt every single ball and then try and hit you on the break. And it can get a bit ugly. I think they're certainly not a bad team, but they are a team that we really ought to be beating. They'll be more than happy, I think, to come away with a point. It'll probably be Benteke and Zaha, I guess, as the two sort of forwards in a 4-4-2, which is obviously an interesting mix of abilities, but there's no reason that we can't do what we did against West Brom, that we can't do what we tried to do against Newcastle. We'll have a much stronger 11 out. And ultimately, it's that sort of movement, that jazz football from Emile Smith Rowe and Bukayo Saka, and the way that Lacazette's been playing, dropping in and combining with those players. It's that football, we've seen it over and over again down the years, that breaks these defences open and unlocks them when they're sitting back on the edge of their own box and happy to clear the ball. So hopefully we see more of the same, and hopefully it works.
Yeah. I mean, I think the important thing, having come through this bad spell, is that we don't in any way rest on our laurels or think that, because we've won a couple of games, we've sorted out all our problems. I think we've got to go into this game sort of like if we were still in that bad run and we're desperate to get out of it. But I think there's confidence in the way that we play now, which is really quite something. And, building momentum before we go into what's a much more difficult run of games in the weeks ahead, I think, is going to be really important. So Palace and then Newcastle on Monday, if we can take full points from those and where it might leave us in the table and how it might sort of start the engines again going into these more difficult games is going to be really interesting. Just very finally, I mentioned earlier, Aubameyang got on the score sheet against Newcastle. He left it late in the game, it's fair to say. But were you encouraged by the performance that you saw from him? There were chances, the movement, the positioning in around the box. Was it more positive from your perspective? He's obviously had a difficult time. I think he acknowledged that in an interview with Sky Sports today, where he talked about how it hasn't been easy, but, he's hoping the goals will come. Were there green shoots there in that performance from you?
I think so. The big one, obviously, is just the goal. Yeah. And he just looked like a man who needed a goal. He looked like that at West Brom when he was snatching at things and trying, I thought, really hard to get himself in positions to score. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about him looking a bit fed up or miserable. And I think you've said, and I completely agree, that I would be more concerned if my main goal scorer wasn't scoring goals and he looked perfectly happy with that. Mm. I think the fact he's been miserable and fed up, I think, is completely natural. Firstly, he was miserable when the team wasn't winning, so we were all miserable, and that's completely normal. And then suddenly the team are winning and they're scoring four goals and he's not getting one. I would be a bit annoyed as well if I were him.
For sure.
You see the chances fall into other people. And sometimes, you know, it's not because you've not worked hard and it's not because you've not got yourself in the position. The goal that comes to mind is Lacazette against West Brom, where Tierney just flashes one across the box and Lacazette just has to put something on it and it will go in, and all of the threat is on the cross. That's exactly what happened with Aubameyang's goal against Newcastle at the end of the Newcastle game. I think he's, like, we wrote a piece, me and John Ollington, with some of his graphics on Ars blog, and I think there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about the goal drought or the lack of goals from Aubameyang. Mm. And the more I watch him, the more I think he's more or less playing the same as he ever did. And the ball just hasn't been falling. The crosses have been looped or to his head or have been not quite fizzed in enough. And the keeper cuts it out, or a defender cuts it out. Or when he's then gone for a cutback, they have fizzed it across the box and he's not standing there. I think it's just one of those things that sometimes things aren't clicking. The ball isn't arriving at the right time or in the right way. And against Newcastle the other day, we saw him have a couple of chances first that he maybe snatched at a bit. I thought he was unlucky with the one from the quick David Luiz free kick. And then ultimately we did see him find the back of the net when a ball was fizzed in low and hard in towards the 6-yard box. I think the fact that he had that chance, there were a couple against West Brom that he was really close to as well. The one where Saka put the ball across the box and he nearly collided with the post springs to mind. And there were a couple against Brighton, one in particular, where I think it might have been Saka again, who sort of whipped it into that near post. The keeper made a save, but the ball just more or less hit him. I think that's Aubameyang's bread and butter. That's what we've not been supplying him with. And not just from the Newcastle game, but I actually see a few green shoots here from the Brighton game and the West Brom game as well. I think the Brighton game was the last game of 2020, and that shot that he had from inside the 6-yard box that was saved was his highest XG shot of all of 2020.
Wow.
And I think that trend has kind of continued a little bit over the last couple of games as well. So if we keep finding him there, I am confident that the goals will come. Maybe not quite in the quantity that everybody hopes for, but certainly more than they have been.
Well, keep fingers crossed for that. A couple of hat-tricks would make his goal tally look an awful lot better so far this season. So no pressure there for the captain. Fingers crossed he can do that. Fingers crossed we can do it against Palace. Lewis, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, Andrew.
And we will talk to you ahead of the Newcastle game on Monday. Because the game is on Monday, James and I will have an Arsecast Extra for you on Tuesday. So do join us for that. But like I said, Lewis and I will preview the Newcastle game at some point on Monday, I think. We'll come back to you with a time on that. Until the next one, take it easy, folks. Cheers. Bye-bye.